Now, on Wednesday, while all of the events we were talking about before the break were going on in Washington, in the UK House of Commons, Labour MP Liam Conlon tabled legislation that would allow more survivors of Irish mother and baby homes who live in the UK access to the Mother and Baby Institutions payment scheme here. Here's Liam Conlon explaining the inspiration behind the bill and what he hopes it'll achieve.
Philomena Lee was 18 years old when she became pregnant in 1952 and was sent to Sean Ross Abbey Mother and Baby Home in Roscrea, County Tipperary, in Ireland. Here Philomena gave birth to her son Anthony, and here they both lived until Anthony reached the age of three and Philomena was cruelly forced to give him up for adoption. Anthony was sold to a couple in the United States. Philomena would never see him again. As a direct result of the abuse and trauma they experienced, many mother and baby home survivors moved to England. In some cases, they came here because they thought that disappearing from their home country was the only way to protect their family's reputations. Last year, the Irish government opened a long-awaited compensation scheme for those survivors. It is a small but important mark of accountability and redress for what happened to them. But thousands of survivors in Britain today cannot access this compensation without being penalised for it. If they do, they will lose any means-tested benefits or financial support for social care. Just as we did for the Windrush families, we must now change the law to ensure that compensation payments for victims and survivors are ring-fenced. This bill, Philomena's Law, named after the inspirational and courageous Philomena Lee, will achieve that.
Now, that was Labour MP Liam Conlon speaking about Philomena's Law, as that bill has now been called, named after Philomena Lee, whose 50-year journey to find her son Anthony, who had been forcibly adopted, was documented in the 2013 film Philomena, starring Steve Coogan. Now, earlier I spoke to Philomena Lee's daughter, Jane Liberton. I started by asking her first how her mother was keeping.
My mum, she is well. She's going to be 92 on the 24th of this month. She's a lot frailer than she used to be. She had a fall a couple of years ago, which knocked her confidence a bit. But in general, she's the same Philomena that we know and love.
And has kept a keen interest in all of the events that led up to the other historic day in the House of Commons when Liam Conlon put a law before the House that would entitle UK survivors to compensation under the Mother and Baby Home Scheme without it affecting their welfare benefits.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a very, very important thing. It's not something I've considered, actually, that that could happen here. But I know in Ireland, the benefits are not affected, are they? So, but yeah, my mum and us as a whole family are very much behind it.
And did you get a chance to chat to her much about it? What's her reaction been since the announcement was made and since, I suppose, there's been such publicity around it?
Yeah, no, she's very happy about it. She is, you know, she's lent her name to it, obviously, but I think that's, we're trying to sort of gain publicity for that as well, because it's not, the uptake hasn't been that high. Well, I don't think it's been that high in Ireland either, but in the UK, I believe there's only about 5% of people that have actually applied. So I hope by lending her name to the campaign or to the law, that it will give more publicity and more people will become aware of it.
Now, obviously, it can never reverse the events and the trauma she suffered all those years ago in Sean Ross Abbey, but does it mitigate the suffering somewhat to get a result like this and to get some kind of redress for people who, like herself, went to live in the UK?
Yes, I think it does, to a certain extent. I think that she feels that, you know, she gets some recognition for what happened. And, yeah, I think it's very important as well to make people understand that they didn't do anything wrong. And I think that this will help them perhaps a little bit move forward in their lives be a bit more comfortable if possible.
And by lending her voice to this and by you being willing to do media interviews, is it your hope that this will be publicised as much as possible so that people who left Ireland for the UK and indeed maybe even people in Ireland would think about coming forward and accessing the Mother and Baby Home Scheme and getting some form of compensation for what happened to them?
Yes, absolutely. That 100%. That's the main reason for us, for my mum lending her name towards the campaign, just to encourage people to come forward. I've been myself surprised at how few people have come forward at the moment. I know in Ireland there are a lot of exclusions. The babies that were under 6 months old can't apply, and I believe there are 24,000 of those. and around only a tenth of the possible institutions and agencies were included in the redress scheme in the first place. So there are many, many more people that should be able to apply but haven't been able to. And I just hope that, you know, with Mother's name being attached to it, it will, like I say, bring publicity and bring more people forward.
And do you think there's more work to be done around those 24,000 people, as you say, who, because they spent less than 6 months as a 6 months as a baby in a mother and baby home, are excluded from the scheme? Do you think there's an injustice in that decision to have that cut-off point?
Absolutely, there's an injustice. They were still taken from their mothers, you know, whether they were 6 months or, you know, a year old, it's still the same separation from their mother. It's completely unjust that all of these people, you know, cannot claim the redress because they still suffered in the same way that the other children over 6 months have. You know, their loss of identity and not, you know, their and loss of their mothers.
So what would you be calling on the Irish government to do with regard to that 6 month cutoff?
I think they need to look at it again. They need to look at the scheme again. I think I read a figure the other day that only 7% of the budget that's been allocated to the redress scheme has been used. So, and I think it's because there are so many exclusions that people can't apply.
Can you maybe explain to people what difference it makes to a family, you know, when you've had a trauma in your family, the like of which your mother suffered, what difference it makes to a family to get some form of recognition that's, I suppose, in terms of its meaning, bigger than the money?
I think the recognition for my mom, it's like, it's a way of apology to her as well. She hasn't really spent any of it. She's got some. She did get her redress scheme, even though it was a bit complicated. It took us a fair while to get it, but she got it in the end. And she kept saying, "Oh, I'm not going to get it. They're not going to give me any." So I think once she did get it, it kind of gives her a bit of a sense of closure to a certain extent. You know, obviously we were campaigning for a long time for people to get the rights to their identity, which obviously happened in October, was it 2022, I believe. And then obviously the redress scheme. And now it just feels like we're always having to campaign, you know, so that everybody gets recognised, equal recognition.
Obviously, for your family, I mean, you've watched your mother go through this and you've watched her campaign for it. So it has become as much your campaign as anything else. It passes to the children.
Yes. No, absolutely it does. I mean, I've always been there with her from the start, but at her age, she obviously doesn't, you know, use the computer or anything like that. So we always just have to keep her abreast and informed. So, I mean, obviously I get lots of news reports and things like that through and then try and keep her abreast. And also living in England, we don't hear so much about it over here at all. So, I mean, that's another thing. I'd say this Philomena's Law and Liam Conlon the other day, he was amazing, absolutely amazing in the House of Commons. You know, he spoke very clearly. And I could feel when we were there that the MPs were in full agreement with what he was proposing.
And do you think that will help? Do you think it'll give maybe a renewed focus on those 24,000 people who are excluded from the scheme?
I would hope so. I mean, I do think there needs to be more publicity around it. But for the people in England particularly, yes, there needs to be more publicity that I think some people are not even aware. But also, I know people in the US from the adoption groups that I'm part of, and they didn't even know about the scheme as well. So I don't think it's been publicised very widely either.
And do you think there's a greater effort needed, you know, to proactively go out and make people aware of this through every available network?
Yes, absolutely. I think it does need to be publicised a lot more. You know, even just national newspapers and things like that. Certainly here in the UK. I mean, there are many, many people that don't know about it.
And what kind of a community have you ended up being in touch with through helping your mother on the road to trying to find information and ultimately to try and get some redress? I mean, have you heard many similar stories, and what kind of people have you talked to over the years?
Over the years, many, many people. We became part of Adoption Rights Alliance, which is it's a Facebook group, but the people that are part of that and the CLAN project are amazing researchers, and, you know, they're the campaigners, really. My mum's was just really the public face of it all. But no, we've become a big community. Lots of people have become my friends, mostly adoptees and then some of the mothers. For my mum, it took a long time. But her main thing was to try and encourage other mothers of her generation to come forward and not feel the shame that they were made to feel at the time. That was a big thing for her. And people are starting to, but I know there are some that still can't or won't ever talk about it. But we've made, you know, we've made amazing friends through these groups.
From what you're saying, it sounds like your role in campaigning and staying involved and interested in this whole issue hasn't finished.
It has not, no. No, every time I think it kind of goes quiet, then something else comes up. But it was, but this is a good thing. This is a good thing for the people in the UK and definitely for the, you know, the exclusions in Ireland. I think that the redress scheme should be looked at again by the government.
Okay, that was Jane Liberton speaking to me about Philomena's Law and other issues in the UK. Of course, Philomena's Law named after her mother, Philomena Lee, who was played by Judi Dench in the film Philomena, made in 2013. Now, still here with me in studio are Minister for Agriculture, Martin Hayden, Sinead Gibney, Social Democrats, TD, and Chief Kathleen Funchen, Sinn Féin, MEP for Ireland South. Martin Hayden, you've heard the call there by Jane Liberton about the ending of this exclusion of people who were in mother and baby homes as babies for who spent less than 6 months in it. What's your response?
Yeah, there's a number of parts to what Jane so eloquently outlined there. And first of all, I'm really conscious whenever we discuss mother and baby homes, there's people listening right now who are deeply impacted by this. People I would deal with through my constituency, people I know who are impacted, and we're really mindful of that. And the work of Labour MP Liam Conlon is to be welcomed, but it is separate to and on top of, as a private member's bill in the House of Commons, ongoing work that's happening between the Department of Children here and the Department of Work and Pensions in Great Britain. And we hope that those a really good engagement is going to lead to a successful outcome of this, that what Liam Conlon has brought about in the House of Commons this week can actually be in place by the end of the year, because the UK officials are currently seeking ministerial approval to implement the legislative changes that would facilitate disregards for the payment scheme there. Okay. So I can go into, like, I have details there around the payment scheme that are important as well, and the really significant promotional element that we've done to answer Jane's point on that, because we spent over 1.5 million now with a targeted advertising campaign, particularly in the UK, but also in the US and in Australia, as well as been here in terms of making sure people are aware.
And we'll get to that, but on the specific point, people who are in a mother and baby home for less than 6 months are excluded from the redress scheme. Is it time to change that?
So look, first of all, the whole setup about this was to be non-adversarial, and obviously it was never to diminish anyone's experience of being there, and absolutely schemes as they're up and running should be reviewed and should be looked at, and that will happen. This scheme has been open just over a year now, since 2024, and in that there is inbuilt reviews to happen, and the first of those reviews are to come back to Minister Foley. Section 12 of the Act actually provides for an annual report to be prepared by the Chief Deciding Officer of the scheme for Minister Foley's attention, and that will be laid before the House of the Oireachtas.
Section 48 of the Act provides for two reviews into the operation of the scheme, and the first to be done within 6 months of the scheme's second anniversary, according to the Department of the Children. Why wait that long?
So that's September 26th, but the first report is due back this June, at the end of June. And
That's a report, though, rather than a review, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. But that report will be informing as well. And ultimately here, the scheme has only been open for less than a year. And Mr. Foley has yet to receive the first annual report. So it will be premature at this stage to initiate changes without getting the review back.
Okay.
We are in there. There's 6,200 people who have applied. There's a significant payment out has been made already of 62 million, and as well this isn't just about the money. I know from dealing with the people involved, it's about the recognition piece as well, and the points.
I suppose if it's not about the money, what is it about then? You know, you say you don't want to diminish the experience of anybody who spent time in a mother and baby home, but there's a clear differentiation being made between people who spent less than 6 months in a mother and baby home and people who spent more than 6 months in a mother and baby home. So how are those who spent less than 6 months not being diminished?
And it's always important when you're establishing these schemes that you try and have it in a way that is non-adversarial, that you don't force the trauma. And I absolutely accept people have been hurt by this process as well, and that's why the review is really important, and we will have a very open mind to that, what's in that report and review in the summer. But beyond that, as well, is the fact that it would be premature to be making that decision now before you've got the first annual review back.
Okay, Kathleen Funchin, you've heard what Martin Hayden has said there, your response?
No, there's a lot I have to say on this issue.
Well, just on the six-month one specifically, let's kick it off there.
Specifically, I think that we should get rid of that rule. I was against that rule from the very start, and we campaigned very strongly along with all of the survivors, who are the people that should be always front and centre of this, to not have that rule in place. And at the time I was chair of the Children's Committee in the Dáil, and we heard from child psychologists that were able to show and prove that in relation to trauma and childhood trauma, nobody can say you could be somewhere for 2 years and have a different experience than somebody that's there for 3 months. So it was very clear from the start that the 6 month rule was put in very cynically as a cost saving measure. What we've seen then, so I fully think that the 6 month rule should be gotten rid of. There's also a few other issues. The fact that not all of the institutions are actually covered. So the Commission of Investigation looked at, I think it was 14 institutions. They are covered by the redress scheme, but there was a lot of what they were called county homes and other homes where women were sent, and they are not covered by the scheme. So there are two problems straight away that if I was in charge, I would get rid of that. All the institutions should be covered and there should be no 6 month rule. Apart from that as well, we know that only 7% of the redress has actually been paid out. So of the 800 million set aside, 55 million has been paid out. So there is a major issue 62. In relation to, okay, maybe it's 62, but it's a very low amount if you take that out of 800 million. There does need to be far more of an information campaign in relation to...
Okay, we'll come back to you get Sinead Gibney's response, first of all, to the six-month cut-off point. I think in a former life, you were Chief Commissioner of the Irish Human Rights Commission. This is something you looked at in that role as well. But in your political role now, what's your attitude to this 6 month cutoff point?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Social Democrats have been very strong on this. I think Holly has been brilliant as our leader in her engagement with survivors and speaking their experience on the Dáil floor. And we agree that the 6 month rule and the expansion of the actual institutions should be a part of this review process. And I don't detect any level of urgency, unfortunately, from the minister here when this is an ageing population who need to access this, and they need to access it now, as do their families. I mean, the reality is that many of the people, and I think it's brilliant what we're seeing from the Labour Party in the UK, this disregard is important. And of course, the reality is that many people relocated to the UK and the US because of their experience, because of the trauma that they experienced from this state. And if we recall, the Commission of Investigation itself was beset with issues. Yeah. And this is, you know, one of many, many ways in which the state has attempted to rectify state's practice of wrongdoing to victims and survivors and has failed abysmally in doing so. It needs to show humility. It needs to be survivor-led. It needs to be trauma-informed. And that has to be part of the review. I think the government should be looking very closely at the Oak report, which I don't think was taken into strong enough consideration in the development of the redress scheme and the multiple pieces of legislation which flowed from the Commission of Investigation. I think there should be better engagement with the pharmaceutical companies and religious orders for contributions to this redress scheme.
This is for medical medicines
vaccine
being
trials.
Tested on
yeah,
people.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So for vaccine trials, I mean, there's lots of elements of it that were just essentially kind of shed along the way towards this redress scheme, which was simply too narrow, too focused on, you know, like, of course, we have to take care of the public purse and consider the cost of this. But we will not move on as a society and as a state unless we actually deal effectively with the experience of victims of state wrongdoing. And we're not doing that.
Martin Hayden, you said you wanted to, that the scheme was set up in such a way so that it wouldn't be adversarial. But if a large cohort of people have to fight their way into the scheme, how is that not adversarial?
Well, look, you know, what we envisage is up to 34,000 people will be able to avail of this over the course of the 5 years with a projected cost of in around 800 million. And redress schemes by their nature tend to... as these go, they tend to be more heavily subscribed to at the end of the, closer to the end of the 5 years than at the start. But even still, in that first year of we've had it, we've had 5,400 notices of termination of issue with 82% people receiving offers, and 4,000 payments have been made and completed. And, you know, when you have a process there, you absolutely want to make sure that it's availed of, and that's why we're spent over €1.5 million.
€1.5 million is a drop in the ocean compared to actually, I mean, if you could give me that in comparison to figures on, say, COVID campaigns or campaigns on other government initiatives, €1.5 million does not reach people, I'm afraid.
No,
we've had a very targeted campaign here. Yeah. I don't think it's fair to describe it as that. It's been a very targeted campaign, particularly at places like London and the US and Australia as well.
There's 2 points I want to make. First of all, in relation to it being non-adversarial, there is a lot of people still waiting on appeals. So I'm dealing with some people that are waiting on a decision to their appeal since October, and we are now in March. And from the start, they said people would be believed. And the reason that people, these people that I'm talking about, have had to appeal is because they weren't believed. And, you know, I think there's a serious level of distrust there, which is very, very unfair. And in relation to the advertisement campaign, I would have said for the birth and tracing information bill, which was about people tracing family and stuff, that there was a good information campaign. I don't think there's a good information campaign for this. We need to be going out into communities, out into maybe retirement groups, you know, into libraries. It's not like you're not talking about a population that are going to be online, you know, potentially.
No, but it's not.
We need to look at lots of different ways.
The advertising wasn't just online. There was an element of it. But
it's
there was targeted static advertising. We had the London Tube advertising.
The figures are showing you, Minister, that it's not working. If only 7% of the actual money has been paid out, that means that people are not applying. And the other thing, just to say, and I think it's important when we're talking about this, because people are listening, if you do know of anybody that is potentially eligible, you know, try have that conversation and try and assure people that it is confidential, because I think there is an element of fear among some people that maybe they haven't spoken about their story and they're afraid that somehow then this will reveal their story, and that won't be the case. And I just think it's important that we actually say that it is confidential.
Martin Hayden, you said that Section 12 provides for annual reports, and that'll feed into considerations of this. So are you saying that potentially there could be a review of the scheme before September 2026 that might review that 6 month cutoff?
So the first report is due by the 30th of June this year, and then the review has to be done within 6 months of the scheme's second anniversary, which is September 2026. And both those processes will feed into us looking at the elements of this, along with the figures and take up in terms of if we do want the people who qualify for this to and who were impacted to be able to avail of it. And in terms of the point around additional institutions being added, while generally its primary legislation would need to change, there is mechanism within the Act that additional institutions can be added to the scheme in certain circumstances as well.
Okay, well, it's an issue we'll no doubt return to, but we're going to take a break now. We're going to come back and looking at why the then Minister for Finance, Jack Chambers, stuck to the government line of 40,000 house completions when an official briefing told him that the figure would be much lower.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.